all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses in the government and commercial or corporate marketplace. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to nvbdc.org. We also want to thank Eisenhower Center. It's a brain injury recovery center. And in particular, it's after the impact program goes beyond awareness campaigns and state-of-the-art imaging to help veterans, first responders, and athletes. Learn more about EisenhowerCenter.com. They're located in Michigan and in Florida. And finally, we want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. And finally, we want to welcome a new sponsor to the program, which is Veterans Business Outreach Center, which is located in Flint, Michigan, and covers Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana. The center is ran and operated by veterans to help other veterans, National Guard, Reserve, spouses, expand and grow businesses. You can find more about them by going to vetbizcentral.org, 810-252-6200. And now on to our programs. We're going to talk to a couple of female veterans that I think have unique stories to tell. And we're going to start with an Army helicopter pilot, Rachel Jackson, and then we're going to talk to Erica Robertson, who's a Navy veteran. Both of them really have a story to tell about how their military service has impacted the rest of their lives. I think it'll resonate with all of our listeners, and you'll learn a few new things. So let's start with the discussion with Rachel Jackson. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Rachel Jackson. Rachel is an Army veteran who served about 10 years, both enlisted at West Point and ultimately in the Army itself, active duty. Rachel, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, we're glad to have you on to talk about your military career and a really interesting business that you have up and running. I should mention that Rachel Jackson is the CEO of Tribal App, a digital platform that helps leaders and organizations build stronger, more inclusive, and innovative teams through stories that inspire, resources that equip, and relationships that empower. And she does all this out of Huntsville, Alabama. And you're going to say to yourself, she doesn't sound like she's from Huntsville. Tell us a little bit about the beginnings, Rachel, before getting into the Army and what you did and all of that.
Yeah, so I was born in Colorado. I grew up in three different states, Colorado, California, and Virginia. And then my mom called the Army recruiter when I was 17 years old, and that's how I found myself in the Army.
You know, and we've all threatened our kids with this, but your mom really did it.
She really did it. I don't think she – I think she had – well, she told me she had pictures of World War II secretaries typing away in the background. When she called the recruiter, she didn't expect me to do what I ended up doing, but it was something that I needed. I needed the discipline and I needed the Army.
Well, good for your mom to say, look at, I've got to set this girl on a good path, and maybe this is the best way to set that path. That making that decision is courageous all the way around.
Absolutely. And I have definitely promised my kids with the same fate.
you've threatened them. Good, good. That's I think we all learn those skills in the military.
I don't think it's a threat so much as a promise.
So how did you make the transition, an unusual transition, from a couple of years enlisted over to West Point and ultimately to an Apache helicopter pilot? So give us a little bit of that story.
Yeah, so when I was at AIT for satellite communications, it's a longer AIT down in Fort Gordon, Georgia, I met a friend who was applying to West Point. He was in my class, and at that time I had never heard about West Point, believe it or not. There was no congressional recommendation or nomination in my future for sure, right? So I went through what's called the command referral process and with my friend, and we had our commander kind of walk us through the steps, and I was accepted to the West Point Prep School, and he got straight in, but I needed to work on my math scores from my SAT, so I went to the prep school, and then once you graduate from the prep school, then you get an automatic appointment to West Point, and so I feel very grateful and blessed to have that opportunity. I loved West Point. There were, of course, hardships and challenges, but I found myself thriving there. I ended up getting my degree in physics and nuclear engineering, but I'd say that with a grain of salt, because I called my dad and said I wanted to major in history, and he told me, Rachel, you did not go to West Point to get a non-engineering degree.
That's right. It's a famous for its engineering programs. Please don't get a soft science course. For somebody who had to go to the prep school to brush up on their math SATs, getting through the engineering and nuclear engineering and physics programs was a lot of hard work. You'd be commended.
Well, thank you. It was I had really great instructors and a really great group of friends to get through.
How did you find yourself over to aviation and Apache helicopters?
Yeah, so your senior year, you get to choose your branch based on your class rank, and I had picked aviation as my top branch, and I was lucky enough to get it. So I got aviation, went to flight school, and also at flight school, you get to choose your helicopter that you fly based on class rank, but then also the slots or the aircraft that are available based on the needs of the Army. And my class had two Apache slots, and I was lucky to get my first choice, which was Apache.
So all of us who've been there are reading luck for hard work, so we know what you're really saying. to get that spot, it's not luck, it's hard work. That's what's making the luck here. And so more obviously training in flying helicopters, and tell us about your duty assignments.
Yes, so my first and sadly, or however you want to call it, last duty station after Fort Rucker was the Fort Hood. I was stationed with the 1st Cav Division, 1st of the 227th out there. So I was stationed with them for about 2 years. When I joined, or when I got there, the unit was just returning from Iraq, and then we had we were preparing to return back to Iraq the following year. So that was my duty. Station was Fort Hood, and I went to Iraq in 2006 with 1st Cav.
And unfortunately, shortly thereafter, you allude to it, and I'll just mention it quickly so we can move through this segment on it. You developed some medical conditions. Brain lesions, nerve damage, optical issues, degenerative disc. I mean, a whole list of like, oh man, things are falling apart.
Turns out I started blacking out for no reason in Iraq. Turns out they don't like pilots to do that. So I was grounded and sent back stateside, and within about 6-7 months found myself discharged and going through that process, actually struggling through a lot of depression because of it. My entire identity was wrapped up in Apache helicopter pilot, you know, and have that completely ripped away from you and completely out of your control. It felt, and I felt shamed, honestly, because, you know, as soldiers, you feel like you don't feel quite good enough when you're struggling with a, you know, some kind of weakness that you can't control. And so that was very difficult for me to go through. But I know that God called me to go through these experiences and obtain this warrior heart and warrior spirit. And I believe for a different purpose in life. And so on the other side of that hardship, I'm very grateful for the story.
And this is this transition is very difficult for many service members. Doesn't matter how it comes about. Probably more traumatic, as you say, when you're medically discharged and you sort of feel ashamed as well. But in 2007, this happens, and all of a sudden your world's turned upside down. How do you talk to us about that movement through, you know, finding who Rachel Jackson veteran is as compared to Apache helicopter pilot?
Yeah, you know, so honestly, there were just times where I was like, you know, God, what are you doing? I don't know what my civilian value is. I don't know what my civilian story is going to be. And really, that's kind of where I found myself in this valley, just learning how to lean on and rely on. Obviously, I have a strong faith in Jesus, and learning to get to know him and trust him. It was kind of crazy how he just started coming through, you know, and not everybody's journey works out like this. But I had, you know, a physics professor call me from West Point and say, hey, Rachel, just got a call from SAIC looking for a junior officer getting out with a degree in physics and nuclear engineering. Like, I only know one.
You said, so, thank God, Dad, I didn't get the history degree.
I know, right? So I ended up getting a job with SAIC, moving to Huntsville, Alabama. You know, and it sounds all rosy, but there's, you know, about 4 or 5 year period where, like, literally I was in almost constant communication with God for strength, for wisdom to, you know, just keep moving forward. And I got married, I had a child, and then I actually ended up working for the government as a civilian. You know, and then in 2010, my mom passed away and things changed again.
Well, I think there's that, you know, you mentioned it and I want to back up to it. There was 4 or 5 years where you're sort of in that dark valley. And I think all too often everybody thinks, well, I'm going to get out and everything's going to be rosy. But it really does take years to, sometimes for many people, I say it's 6 or 7 years, to get through the all of that other stuff and be able to get on the other side. And it seems to me that faith and family was really important to you to get through that dark valley. Talk to us a little bit of, you know, about your mom who put you into the Army. And yeah. And during that period has her own challenges and her own way of coping with them that I think builds on your strong foundation of faith and family.
Yeah, well, my mom, she struggled with a lot of things to the day she died. But the one thing she did was she loved the Lord. And he was able to use her in her story, no matter where she was. And for the last 7 years of her life, she spent in and out of hospital rooms. And basically bedridden. But when people would come see her, the first thing she would say is, now, honey, do you love Jesus? And so I knew that she was a warrior at some level and that God was using her. And that was comforting. But for me, you know, I mean, we all have things that we carry around, you know, whether it's guilt or fear or shame or pride or whatever it is, you know, there's some kind of thing that we got to get through to get to the other side of, you know, what God would have for us, in our next chapters. And it's so important to surround yourself with, advocates, with champions, with people who can speak into your life, who can offer hope and help and purpose to you and who can, kind of coach you and cheer you on. And I found that, you know, in various people, really close friends, you know, my husband, just, my tribe, so to speak, who surrounded me and who just kind of walked with me and just helped me get to the next day. And it wasn't so dark all the time, you know. It's just God just had some big calls on my life, on my heart.
Well, and I want to get to talking about Tribal App, but I think we have to do justice with, so you got out in 2007. By about, I think it's 2012, you've started Shattered Media. A couple of years later, it's evolved into Community Journal, and around 2018, so now we're 10 or 11 years after you're out, you're starting this Tribal App program, raising all kinds of money, doing great things to launch this business. But talk to us about what you were searching for, something in terms of the right business for where you should be going as an entrepreneur during that period between 2012 and, say, 2018. Tell us what you were searching for.
Well, when my mom passed away in 2010, I actually went through a really difficult crisis in my faith where I really struggled to reconcile the reality of God and heaven with the current reality that I was living at that time. And I actually really struggled to believe in God. And I found myself, I come to really depend on him. So not being able to believe in him fully was difficult for me. And so for about a 3-month period, all I could pray is, God, help me believe. And what he did is he walked me through my story and all the times that he had been with me. And at the end of about a 3-month period, I said, okay, I believe in you because I've experienced you. I know you because I've experienced you. And I never looked back. But at the end of that period, he said, Rachel, I want you to reach people who need hope, help, and purpose. He said, I want you to do it, and you're going to do it through stories, and you're going to do it through relationships. And relationships are going to move people to action. And he said, you're going to reach millions. And so I didn't know what to do, but I started a blog. I realized there's 600 million blogs with a new one created every half second, and nobody cared what I had to say. Moved on to a magazine called Shattered Magazine in 2012. We raised $7,000 in a Kickstarter campaign to print our first issue. And we, by the grace of God, printed Shattered Magazine for 3 years. We got picked up by Barnes & Noble and Books A Million with our first issue, turned down by some Christian publishers, But we didn't ever start to reach the millions. And so I didn't feel like I had reached my calling. And so we started thinking about digital platform, but when I started this company, or when I started business, first of all, I was a person with a mission, not just trying to be an entrepreneur, and when I started the business, I only had a BlackBerry. I didn't even know what a iPhone or,
I was gonna ask, okay, you're an engineering grad from West Point, but that doesn't mean you know anything about digital platforms and social media that are evolving so quickly.
Yeah.
Why did you think you could do this?
I studied. I have really, really studied. I've studied a lot of data, a lot of research. I think that's what physics did for me, was it taught me how to do a lot of studying and a lot of learning. And so, there's a ton of books that I've read, a ton of research I've done on so many different topics, psychological, about resilience, about social networks, about digital media, about faith, about all kinds of stuff. We've done so much research over the past 8 years and 8 to 10 years. And it really just led us, about 5 years ago to this revelation that we needed to start meeting people where they were, digitally and doing so in an effective way that would actually connect us back to each other and what actually matters in life. Or just feel that the stuff of the good stuff gets drowned out in the rest of the noise.
I want you to focus, if you will, some comments on how the Tribal App is different than, and by mission different than, just your basic social media that everybody knows about.
Yeah, well, social media is the human experiment where you let anybody publish anything and let human nature rise to the top. You've got dictate what rises to the top. You've got algorithms. You've got big corporate agendas. You've got, it's this concept of more friends, more followers, more content, keep surfing, and it's really where people end up going to check out and or to get involved into heated debates. And it's become the voyeurism of humanity, in my opinion. Tribal, as opposed to social networks, is a place where we want people to be able to go and check in. It's different than social networks. We call it the meaning network. We believe that leaders are so important, and so tribes are leader-led. We believe that local networks are the most powerful networks, and so we have a very hyper-local focus and emphasis. And as opposed to just anybody posting anything, we really encourage people to share their stories. So we're story-based, and we want to hear stories of hope, help, and purpose that can help connect people. Stories are the great connector. They're the on-ramp to meaningful relationships, and they're the on-ramp to meaningful resources, practical resources in our lives, and they're the on-ramp to making an impact in our communities.
When you tell a story, you have to be a little more vulnerable. You have to be a little more open about things as yep. compared to just posting what your lunch looked like. So you're yep. really trying to make it a meaningful place for people to spend time and read and maybe be inspired.
Yeah, and to feel safe. They're welcome. Their story, there's no story. And tribal is not faith-based, but it is faith-friendly. And we just want people to know that no matter what the story is, there's always hope. There's always somebody there for them. And I believe personally that God can use any story for our good, his glory, and the saving of many people. But even if you don't believe in God, I think stories are so important in that whatever you've been through can be used to make a difference and an impact in the lives of those around you.
Let's talk again about the sort of invisible hand that's involved here, because tribal's a up and launched, and we're going to give you the website at a moment and more about it. But there certainly was a point where there wasn't any money. Nobody was investing. What is this crazy idea you've got going, Rachel Jackson? And how do you work your way through that process to get to where you are?
Well, I never lost sight of the big vision, the big mission that God had called me on. I think for about the first 2.5 years, I used to worry about it. I used to be so anxious and just stressed. And finally, I think God just kind of beat it out of me, where he's like, just relax, like, let go. You know, if I called you to this, I'm going to make it happen. And I just can't tell you the number of times I've looked at the red line and something has come through. You know, I've never had to let my people go. There's been bills that have gone unpaid, but I've been able to pay my employees, and that's most important to me. So he's always provided. And even now, though, I mean, with COVID and everything, we're a startup, investor pipelines kind of dried up, you know, like we're kind of sitting here. Okay, God, what's next now? You know, But I believe, and I've shared with my team, you know, and they're not, I don't know that they're all believers, but I shared with them, you know, like, look, I don't know where it's coming from, but I know it's coming. you just have to keep your vision and your mission in focus, be willing to pivot. I mean, when things aren't working out, don't keep doing the same thing, you know, stay true to your mission, but maybe you need to pivot on your tactics or your techniques or your procedures, your TTPs, right?
Now that sounds like a military officer giving a lecture. We can relate to that. Let me ask you, Rachel, as you kind of look back now on life and say, based on where I'm at and what I've come through, would you still encourage young people to go through a stint in the military on their way to whatever they're going to become?
Absolutely. I think the military was fundamental to teaching me values in life. I think I needed to learn, duty, honor, respect, integrity, personal courage, honor, loyalty. I said that out of order for the leadership acronym, but I needed to know, I needed to learn all that. I needed the discipline and the guidance and the mentorship and the hard challenges and to overcome obstacles, you know, and sometimes I see our world right now, and it's so hard for people to see how we can overcome obstacles. And what I love about the military is that I've learned that it's okay. I can be uncomfortable. I can go into new situations and I will survive. Nothing is as scary on the other side of it.
Absolutely.
As going through it.
Absolutely.
You know? And that you have your brothers and sisters to go with you. Nothing's impossible. So I hope that for a lot of people and a lot of soldiers and a lot of veterans, I know that there's a lot who are struggling with heavy, heavy stories, but I hope they realize that there's a whole lot of people out there. They've got a big tribe and that they've got something instilled in them that the world needs right now. This idea that we can overcome anything working together.
So talk to them. You have three tribal, you have impact tribes, business tribal, and military tribal. Tell us how people, if this sounds like, man, this sounds something my organization or I personally or other, my church or somebody might be interested in. Tell us what those are and sort of how they might experience tribal.
Yeah, so you can go to our website, tribalapp.com, and just click the sign up buttons to get started if they want to do their own tribes. If you want to experience tribal first and see what it's like, we're opening up a tribe for all, for anybody to just kind of come and read our content and kind of get an idea of what it's all about before they start their own tribe. But we're looking for leaders. We're looking for partners. We're looking for content. So there's a whole lot of different ways to get involved.
And what's the cost model here for the individual who's sitting there going, man, this might be helpful to me, but geez, I'm not sure I'm in a spot I can do a big thing.
Well, for individual use right now, there's no cost. The organizations pay access fees. The cost structure for organizations is based on how many people they're going to have in their tribe.
Very typical. So we would encourage people to go to tribalapp.com to check it out. It's clear that Rachel Jackson and her team at Tribal are on a mission to do good and hopefully help you in that regards, sort of get your life together as well. You're a startup. How many years at this point?
About 2.5 at Tribal.
When do do you look at it and say, I'm going to be, you know, we're going to be here in 2 more years? Or is it you just take it how it comes every month?
So I believe we're going to be there. I think we're going to be doing just fine in a few years. We're actually have some opportunities with the military opening up, the military and veteran communities, very excited about that potential. And then we also have some other opportunities opening up in faith-based communities and corporate America. So we'll keep on fighting the good fight. You just take a, you know, 1,000-mile journey one step at a time. So we'll just keep on doing it, and we'll be here. It's not going anywhere.
We really appreciate you taking some time today, Rachel Jackson, U.S. Army veteran, Apache helicopter pilot, entrepreneur, person on a mission, talking to us about your transition, your experiences, your faith and family, and the good work that everybody's doing at tribalapp.com.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's pretty clear that military service can take you in a lot of directions. And Rachel talked to us about her direction, and after a word from one of our sponsors, we're going to talk to Erica Robertson, a Navy veteran, who's going to talk to us about how her military experience took her in a different direction.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Erica Robertson. Erica's a Navy veteran. Which is what we're going to focus on today, but she's a pretty impressive lady, so I want to give you some background here. But before we start, Erica, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's great to be here.
Erica is a Detroit, Michigan native. She did some moving around with her mother and family and spent a little time in Texas. as a kid, did her Navy stint, came back and picked up a bachelor's degree from the University of Michigan, and then went on and got her MBA from the University of Michigan in 2009. She's currently working on her doctoral degree from Vanderbilt in the School of Education. She was in the Navy, I think, from 1994 to 1997, if I've got that right.
That's correct.
She's the founder of something called Education at Scale, a national nonprofit organization focused on policy and research, and recently has started a publishing company called Little Black Girl Adventures and published a book we're going to talk a little bit about. She's, after her time at the University of Michigan, she's worked for some pretty impressive private sector employers before becoming what I would call a K-12 education crusader and change agent. She's worked for folks like Accenture and Nike in Europe, actually, Western Europe, Detroit Children's Fund, and some other nonprofit. So she's had a big portfolio over time of different things, and you can sort of see how life has changed, and she's focusing on education here. But I had the opportunity here, because I mentioned to you, to read your book, The Adventures of a Little Black Girl, Black Detroit Girl Homecoming, which was just published. Tell us what the genesis of that was.
Well, thank you for that generous introduction, Jim. So The Adventures of a Little Black Detroit Girl really is my story. And I did publish it as a fiction young adult novel. I did change a few names, et cetera. But the genesis really, was really my journey from when I was just a little black Detroit girl. Growing up on the east side of Detroit, to now being a, grown Detroit woman coming back to, the city and my journey in between, but specifically focused, on my life between 10 and 21, which was a very challenging, time for me. And I wanted to, being in education now, I wanted to contribute to some of the bigger issues, in education that are important to me. And one is, trauma, resiliency, and healing of our young people. And I wanted to, as a way to enter that conversation, I wanted to share my story of trauma, my story of healing, my story of resiliency, as a way to get into the conversation and as a platform for young people to know that it's okay to talk about the hard parts of their life. And it's actually healing to talk about the hard parts of your life and also to reshape your own personal narrative. So you may have a hard start, but you can use those challenges. You can use that resiliency to create whatever type of life you want. And I wanted this book to be an example and an inspiration to young people.
Well, you say it's for young people, which it certainly is, and it's written in a way that you could give it to your kids or your grandkids or your niece or nephew, and it'd be an easy read. It's very candid. It really talks about issues you often don't find talked about, so I think it's a great read. And in reading it, and knowing a little bit of your backstory from some friends of ours, you mention how in those challenging years from 10 to 21, became a mother at 18, that the baby's daddy ended up in prison shortly thereafter. And you sort of had to reevaluate your life and think about, how do I move forward from where I'm at? And it took you to joining at 19, the United States Navy. And there's a few references in the book to your Navy experiences, and that's what we want to talk to our veteran radio listeners today about, Erica, is tell us why the Navy, and tell us about those initial experiences of being in the Navy in the mid-1990s.
Yeah, so I have actually a funny story that I didn't capture in my book of how I ended up in the Navy, because I actually was ready to go and all set to go to the Air Force like my mother. But what happened, so if I take you back a little bit, was, like you mentioned, I was pregnant in high school and to my high school sweetheart. And after I graduated from high school, kind of working some part-time, jobs, at Kentucky Fried Chicken, at the drugstore, and he was working at the gas station. And, you know, I always had, even from when I was younger, just had big dreams. And because I did run away from home at 14, and because there were so many challenges, I kind of had forgotten about my dreams and what I wanted to do. But, you know, as you read in the story, Jim, I was my passion was reignited when I had met someone that had been very important, you know, that played a very important role in my life. And I had decided at 18 that I wanted to, you know, revisit the dreams that I had. And I had to figure out how to do that in, you know, in light of, you know, me having a young daughter and a boyfriend. So I actually, you know, one day I came home from work and I was talking to Anthony. That was Chloe, my daughter. You know, her name is Zoe in the book, but the father. And I said, hey, we got to get out of here. And I said, I have a plan. I said, I want to join the military like my mom did. Get us out of here. And he was in college at the time. He was in community college. I said, you can finish college and I'll work and you make sure we have food on the table. And then when you finish college, I'll go to school because I'll get the GI Bill. And then, you know, you can make sure that we have food on the table. And so he said, okay, that sounds like a plan. And so we decided to get married. I said, hey, we got to get married to do this. And we decided to get married. And like you mentioned in the book, Jim, 8 days after we got married, I was out visiting friends or family with my daughter. And I got a phone call that Tony had gotten into some trouble. He had taken somebody's life and he had went to jail. And I did not. And I had already enlisted in the Air Force. I was ready to go. I was 2 weeks out from the Air Force. But I wanted to get out right away. And part of the reason, and I don't even know if I can say this now, Jim, but part of the reason, you know, I wanted to move fast because I didn't know if, you know, the Air Force found out that, you know, I had a husband that went to jail, if I was still going to be able to go. And that was my only way out. So I was like, let me get out of here as quick as I can so I can have a chance. And so I remember going to see my recruiter. There was a couple pieces of paperwork or some stuff that he needed. And I was waiting for him. And the Navy recruiter was actually there. And he was like, hey, who are you waiting for? And I told him, you know, and he was like, well, hey, have you heard about the Navy? And I said, can I leave tomorrow? He was like, yes. I'm like, okay, sign me up. And so literally then I just switched from going to the Air Force to going to the Navy because I was able to leave that week.
Oh, that little part of the story is not in the book. Very interesting.
I know. And so that was the why. That was the why.
Okay. Now I also want to make you talk about something else you referenced that didn't get any development. Because when everybody who's taken the oath ends up in boot camp somewhere. And I don't know anybody who thinks it's a pleasant experience. It's just part of the process, you know. And you talk about a particular petty officer in boot camp that, you know, maybe being helpful is too kind a word, but talk about that experience at that time for you.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually, Jim, would say helpful looking back. Now, going through it, I wouldn't say helpful. But, you know, looking back as a mature adult, it absolutely was helpful. It was actually transformational for me, which is why she's mentioned in the book. But, you know, going in, you know, I was just turning 19. I don't think I was 19 yet. And being, you know, a very independent spirit, I mentioned that I had ran away from home at 14. So I had been out and about on my own, making my own decisions, making my own rules. And, you know, I was already a fireball before I even left home. And so coming into the, you know, military where now you have to do as you're told, there's a certain way that they talk to you. There's certain behavior and etiquette that's expected. That was very new for me. Now, it wasn't new as far as discipline and structure because my mother was in the Air Force and my stepfather was in the Air Force. So I was used to that, you know, level of discipline, but not to the level as an adult that what you're required to do in boot camp. And so long story short, I used to get in trouble for everything from, you know, my petty officer used to say, hey, Erica, you know, you need to go to the back of the marching line. You shouldn't be shaking your butt at the, you know, front of the line to, you know, putting my hands on my hips and talking back to another company commander. And so I did it not because I wanted to act out, but because that was just, you know, who I was. And the Navy and the military in general, they get rid of that. They want you to act, walk, talk like a soldier. And that just wasn't who I was at that point in my life. But she did see something in me. you know, that kept pushing. And I don't just say me, because I think one of the special things about company commanders and folks that teach and lead in the military is they know that the young people that come through, you know, they know for the most part, especially if you're enlisted, you know, you're there because that's your only way out in a lot of cases. And so they're not there to kick you out. They're there to really try to figure out how they can help you become an excellent soldier or excellent seaman. And so, you know, she actually poured into me. There was a few times where I was actually on the cusp of getting kicked out of boot camp for, you know, insubordinate behavior. And she went to bat for me every time. And over the course of, I think it was 12 weeks or 14 weeks, you know, I went from this, you know, kind of silly, you know, insubordinate young girl to a, you know, I would say now, and what she said is an exemplar of what, you know, that type of discipline and transformation can do for you.
And you come to that, you know, change, if you will, reshaping your own narrative, to use your language, over this 3-month period. But you come to that with, if you will, all the baggage that you were getting away from. And in your instance, you know, there had been an abusive family relationship, that both to your older sister and to your younger brother, yourself, to having a baby out as an 18-year-old. I mean, you brought to boot camp, if you will, a whole lot of baggage, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And part of, you know, the great thing, and I didn't know this, but it was definitely a blessing, Jim, is, you know, in the military, and you don't know this, I certainly didn't going in. I saw it as a way out. I was like, I'm just going to get out of here. This is a way out. I can pay for college. That was kind of where it was for me. But once you get in, you start learning of all the other supports and benefits there is in being in the military. And one of the things that I learned about quickly when I got there was they had, you know, you could see a therapist, a counselor, that was part of the package for free. And, you know, not even a couple of weeks after I got out of boot camp and got to my duty station in Groton, Connecticut, I remember going to see a psychologist. And she asked me, she says, well, Erica, you know, what brings you in here? And Seaman Robertson, what brings you in here? And I said, hey, I don't want to be like my mother when I grow up. So I knew that there was something wrong with me. I knew, and I'm not going to say wrong with me, but I knew I had a lot of baggage. I knew I had a lot of emotions. I knew I had a lot of feelings that I needed to unpack and talk to someone. And being a young mom, I knew that I had to do it for my daughter, because I didn't want to have her grow up in a household similar to what I grew up in. I wanted to be a better version of my mother. And so it was through that introduction and that free counseling, I got, you know, I received counseling my entire tour in Connecticut. And then 15 years after I left the military, because it was a very healing opportunity for me.
Well, and you point that out in the book, and you actually give this Navy therapist some kudos for saying, you know, this helped me move forward on the right path. And obviously it must have been advantageous at the time that you were doing the counseling. You could see the benefit of it. You weren't being denigrated for it. Your performance reviews weren't being impacted by it. It must have fit right in with what you were doing at your duty station.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing is, when you're that young and you have in what we call trauma, right? And that's what the book is really about. When you experience a lot of trauma, a few things happen. And one of the biggest things that happens is it diminishes your self-worth. It makes you blame yourself for the things that happen. You don't think highly of yourself. You don't think highly of your contributions. And by, you know, getting therapy and talking through what you're experiencing helps you realize that you're of value. It helps kind of clear away all that noise of, you know, and the doubt you have about yourself, and it helps you dream again. It really, and especially when you're younger and you have so much, you have these dreams inside, but you have all this other stuff that's kind of clouded your judgment and piled on top of you. It helps free you. It was a very freeing, experience. And then I started really dreaming big about what I wanted to be when I grew up. And, you know, that counselor really helped me. You know, I started going to, you know, community college while I was in the Navy, right? And started dreaming about where I wanted to go after that. So it really was a very beneficial experience. And of course, these things are confidential. So even within your, you know, your company or your department in the Navy, folks don't have to know that you're seeing someone. It's a very confidential, very safe and very freeing environment.
Well, I think at times people don't understand how much the military is there to support its members. As you pointed out in boot camp, they're not looking to kick you out. They're trying to mold you, if you will, to reshape you into what is an ideal soldier or seaman. They're trying to give you medical and healthcare services, again, for that same purpose. But I think oftentimes today, whether it's kids thinking about joining the military or their parents and support structure, their family thinking about their kid going into the military, they don't necessarily see all the advantages, do they?
Yeah, they don't. And part of it is just the unknowing, you know, especially if you have two scenarios. One, you're a kid, you're trying to figure out where you're going. You may or may not have the guidance, you know, of a parent who has the knowledge. And so, you know, all you know is, you know, there's a military, there's a chance that you may or may not go to war. And, you know, you just don't have that information. It's and I think it's better now. And again, I've been out of the scene for such a long time. But, you know, just like, you know, when you go to college and, you know, you have recruiters come on college and they talk about, you know, going to, you know, various either graduate schools or various companies, they recruit you, they woo you, they show you all the ins and outs and they give you all the details. I think what's missing from that sales gimmick from the military perspective is going in depth about all the extra stuff, right? So they tell you, you'll get you'll get experience, you'll travel the world, you can go to A school, you can, you know, but they don't tell you all the other stuff that's really helpful. And I think the way in which it's packaged, there is an opportunity to package it a little bit more to provide more transparency. And I know one of the things that really helped me, Jim, when I did get out, and we didn't talk about this at all in the military, was the VA loan. I actually used a VA loan to buy my first house. And it was amazing. But going in, all I knew, it was a way out. So I just think there's an opportunity to maybe do more, you know, as far as marketing and communicating and sharing all the benefits of the military.
Well, I want to talk about your particular job or MOS in the military, because I don't know that I've ever talked to somebody who was a journalist and in the military as an enlisted person and who had her own biweekly column called Ask Erica. So for this fireball 19-year-old kid out of Detroit, getting into public affairs and getting into writing like this probably turned out to be kind of a dream job.
It was a dream job. It was cool, and I have to say I was the envy of most. And even in boot camp, and again, you know, I have to give some grace to God because I do believe that He's been the author of my story as well. But even in boot camp, you know, you get to, you know, you in the Navy, and I'm not sure how it is in other branches, but at the end of a certain amount of training, you have to work. And most folks go to the galley or they go to Master at Arms, which is like the brig. But I was chosen to go to the public affairs office in boot camp. I think it's 2 or 3 weeks. And I really liked it. And so just getting that exposure in boot camp, when I did get to my my duty station in Connecticut, you know, you can think about what you want to do. And the thing about the Navy is if you could choose to go to like an A school, but if you go to an A school, which is you actually learn a trade, you go through the classes, you go through the curriculum, they add on. So 3 years is the minimum you have to serve. But then if you go to an A school, depending on what type of job it is, you need to stay an extra one, two, 3 years. And so I learned that, you know, the journalism, you could go to an A school. But then you had to stay in longer. And I really just came in to, you know, get some college money and get out of Detroit. And so I didn't want to stay longer. But I learned that you could also strike a rate. And what that really means is you can work as an apprentice under someone, do the studying. So do the self-study with the curriculum, take the assessments necessary to pass, kind of like if you're taking, you know, like a GMAT or GRE, or even the bar or, you know, your medical. and you can then become, you can get into this rate. So I can't remember the length of time, but I did apprentice under my chief petty officer over public affairs, you know, for a period of time. I want to say it was 10 or 12 months, could have been longer. And I studied both journalism and photography. So after, you know, that period of apprenticeship and me passing the test, I officially became a journalist and photographer, and I did work for the Navy paper, The Dolphin. And I learned how to write, very concise, information. And more importantly, as a photographer, you know, I had a chance to kind of go out and interact with just a bunch of different people. I love interacting with people. And I actually had a car. I didn't know at the time, but I actually had a company car. So I was one of the few enlisted men that had a car that I could drive around and go to the different venues to write my story and take pictures. So it was an absolutely amazing experience for me.
Well, let me bring this full circle before we run out of time, because I want to think about this 19 or 20 year old fireball from Detroit who becomes this journalist writing stories. And today I'm talking to that same Erica Robertson, who not only has published her own book, she's now owner of a publishing company. Again, talk about dreaming big, from I'm going to write some articles for the Dolphin to I'm going to own a publishing company. I'm pretty impressed on the full circle.
Yeah, when you said it like that, Jim, I just got goosebumps because you're right. My life has, come full circle. And, I do believe in God, and in the Bible it says nothing wasted. And I believe all these experiences, whether they're challenging or whether they're exciting, whether they're fun, or whether they're, they're sad, they all work together, to create whatever future you want to create if you allow it. And I just believe that all the different experiences that I've had, and they did start with the military. I believe I was given, preferential treatment getting into University of Michigan, because I was a veteran. I believe that, in certain jobs that I went to, I was given preferential treatment because people really saw that as a value add. And so I just think, starting off with that, the discipline and then also the pedigree that you carry with you for the rest of your life as a veteran really, really does, really has been really helpful to me. And using all the different resources that the Navy provided me, from, the GI Bill to, my VA loans, really has, helped me build a life that that's lacking nothing.
Well, it's the envy of many, believe me. Before we want to run out of time, I do want to have you tell folks, if they're, as life has come full circle, not only in this publishing world, but you've gone back to education. You're a K-12 education crusader and change agent, as I mentioned, and you took advantage of education throughout your military career, whether it's studying at a community college while you're in the Navy or studying to, under the chief petty officer to become a journalist. Tell folks now how they can find the book, find out what you're doing in the educational field, and keep track of Erica Robertson.
Yes. So the book it released in July. So it is available on my website, and my website is www.littleblackdetroitgirl.com. And what I will add to that is, I'll give it again, www.littleblackdetroitgirl.com, is, this book is just the first of what I'm trying to build. Into your point earlier, Jim, is I really do want to build a publishing empire that can really empower little young, boys and girls. And I have boys and girls of color, but it's all little boys and girls, to be bold enough and brave enough and, to share their story, to own their story, and to reshape their story any way they want to. So the book is just one of several things that I have in the pipeline for young people. We also have curriculum that we have created for schools, for middle school, high school, and college, as well as virtual book clubs, to have a platform for young people to learn more about resiliency and how to build it in their lives. So a lot's going on. So if you go on the website, you can sign up to learn more about everything we have going on. and you could pick up a copy of the book.
Erica, we appreciate the time that you've taken with Veterans Radio today and certainly your service in the Navy. And as you know, we talked earlier, what we're trying to do on Veterans Radio is tell real stories that maybe can get passed along to kids, grandkids, nieces, and nephews to say, hey, maybe here's something you didn't know about and an opportunity that might exist. And I think your experiences in the Navy and what you've been able to accomplish from that foundation are really inspiring.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me. I think this show is wonderful to highlight stories of veterans, to inspire others. And I will say that, you know, the Navy for me was a game changer. It was a game changer. And I hope that, you know, more of our young people consider it as an option for their future as well.
These two stories really do sum it up. I think Erica Robertson just said it's a game changer. I think for many of us, military service was just that. It gave us a leg up. It maybe gave us the GI Bill. Maybe it gave us a whole new set of friends and world or national perspective. So I really appreciate both of these female veterans taking some time to talk to Veterans Radio today and talking about how, indeed, military service is not only honorable, but it's a game changer. It's transformative for their lives and the lives of their family. So we want to thank you for listening to Veterans Radio again today. We encourage you to go to veteransradio.net, follow us on Facebook, send Dale or I some story ideas. You can send it to Dale@veteransradio.net or Jim@veteransradio.net. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your officer of the deck today and drive the ship. And we're always looking forward to interacting with our listeners and encouraging you to talk to our sponsors. You'll find them on our webpage, and particularly those Ann Arbor VSO sponsors who have been there for us for a long time, and our corporate national sponsors who keep us going. And until next time, you are dismissed.